Have you ever been in a situation where you're around or come in contact with a person and it just makes you uncomfortable? Just been in an uncomfortable, this seems weird. You know, it could be anything. It could be, I was thinking through of, you know, maybe they, someone just, they have coarse language. They talk inappropriately and you're with them and you just kind of cringe a little bit. You're not sure what to do. Has me a lot in my work, I tell you, all the time. It's like, oh wow, you know, yesterday Sherry and I were in the hardware store in Boscobel. We were in one aisle and there's an aisle over and there's a guy talking about getting whatever it was, but the language out of his mouth was like, we were cringing just there, you know. I was happy my children weren't there. It's like, wow, you know, so you just feel uncomfortable. Or maybe it's somebody who, you know, maybe just seems a little odd to you, or they're dressed poorly, or they don't smell very good. You know, I remember sitting in a subway train in New York City, just crowded, having to sit down, and this guy sat next to me, and the guy must have lived like ate fish, lived by a fish market, slept with fish, because this man smelled like fish. And I had to go like five stops with fish guy right next to me, and it was just uncomfortable, awkward. And then he tried to talk to me, and I'm like, I don't want to talk. I just want to plug my nose, dude. You know, and you feel weird, you know, and we feel awkward sometimes. And a lot of that awkwardness, I think, with people is because they're different. I mean, you get right down to where it comes down to is they're just different. Maybe it's language, economic status, color, culture, because our natural inclination is to be comfortable, and that is then with people who are like us. That's the easiest thing to do, and that's just how it is, all right? It's way easier to be around folk that are like you in whatever way. And I want you to keep that in mind about how that works. You know, we have our groups, our church, our work, and there are those who are inside, and then there are those who are outside. And our story today in Joshua chapter 2, and if you have a Bible, you can turn there. That's what we'll be camping today and looking at, is the story of Rahab. What's that? No. Rahab the prostitute. Okay, let's just get it straight here. Rahab is, as we'll see, the outsider. The very definition of outside. Way outside what is comfortable for most of us. So today, let's consider that feeling of discomfort with the outsider. And as we're going through, think to yourselves a couple questions. One is, as we go through this, how does God working in this with the outside and inside and those kind of things? And then turning this inward a little bit too, as I did this week a lot. How do I treat the outsider? How do I react with those who are different or maybe uncomfortable? And what should I do with those kind of people? As we look at this story here in Joshua chapter 2, I want you to think too, as we read it, remember we're trying to, as we look at Old Testament narrative, we're trying to, you know, make those bridges. 3,000, 4,000, whatever, how many years ago to now. It's a long time. And here, we're going to see some things that are weird to our thinking. And so we want to make those connections. So let's see what those connections are. What is the most important thing here in this story? Why is this story here? And maybe we'll get some answers and see what God has for us. Now, let's read the chapter first. Joshua, where am I? There we go, Judges, Joshua. So Joshua chapter 2. The whole chapter, 1 through 24. So this comes right after Joshua now has taken over. The people have accepted him as leader. Their eyes now are looking across the Jordan again to the promised land. The land, the land, the land, the promised land. It's in sight and in their grasp, and they're ready to go. And then we come into this little story. And Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. And it was told to the king of Jericho, "Behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land." Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land." But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, "True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them." But she had brought them up on the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords. And the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out. Before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." And men said to her, "Our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you." Then she let them down by rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, "Go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterward you may go on your way." The men said to her, "We will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have come to make us swear." And she said, "According to your word, so be it." And she went, sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. They departed and went into the hills and remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned. And the pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. Then the two men returned. They came down from the hills and passed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun. And they came and they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, "Truly the Lord has given us the land into our hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us." It's like a Cold War cloak and dagger spy novel. I mean, you got all this stuff going on. Story, and there's hiding and people and intrigue and, you know, trying to get away and all these things. It's fascinating. A lot here. But I want us to make sure we get to the heart of the matter. What is the real point here? Now, there are some folk who look at this little story and they think maybe it was put in there later. It just doesn't fit. I mean, and you could naturally go from chapter 1 and then go right into chapter 3. It kind of, that's how the story goes. You wouldn't need this little bit here, although later in chapter 6, you know, they talk about Rahab and that kind of thing, but I don't think so. But why? Why is this here? Why take so much time? Well, in your bulletin, I gave you a little piece of paper with a little outline. And if you look at it, I think it draws our attention to what's important here. If you look how it's set up, you have the first section, which is Joshua commissions the men. Doesn't say who these men are. Just a couple of guys, echoes of when they went in earlier and came back with a bad report. And then the second part there, B, there's their arrival in the city, and then there's a problem. The king finds out right away and they have to deal with it. And then the C, the middle there, Rahab's confession of faith. And then the next section is another concern, their escape. They're concerned about being caught. And then in the end, they come back to Joshua. Now, if you look at it like that, and as we go through, we're going to kind of concentrate on that. Think of it like a sandwich. So you got the bread, and maybe you got some lettuce, and then you got the meat in the middle. And then you got some more lettuce, and then some bread. And I think the writer, whoever wrote this, did this purposely to draw us. You know, if you study and look at these literary devices and how we can think to bring us to what is really important. Because if you look at what's going on here, the commission by Joshua, and Joshua, sends out these folks. He's the only one that's named, him and Rahab. There's no other names involved here. You have this, the interesting little tidbit for you is the place where they were, Shittim, how you want to say it? If you look in Numbers 25, Israel had camped there earlier and failed miserably. Miserably. They prostituted themselves out to the Baals and gods, and it was really bad. I mean, Moses was about done at this point, okay, at the same time. So that's interesting how they came back to here again. And so again, little tidbit there. Rahab is mentioned. Again, you can get all kinds of questions here. I mean, so the guys come into town, first thing they check out is the prostitute place. What in the world? Well, a couple things. One, it's probably like a tavern inn sort of a place, all right? Everybody knew what was going on there. Okay, there's no surprises here. But if you want to stay hidden, if you kind of want to be not stick out too much, well, that's kind of where you would go. All right, so I don't blame them too much. Although, for spies, they seem to have not done a good job. Right? I mean, they get there, and first thing the king says, hey, these Israelites are here, bring them out. So I don't know what's going on there, but they need to brush up on their spy craft, I think. All right. I don't think there's any reason for us to conclude that the spies were there for any other reason other than hide. Okay, there are some try to speculate there. You know, they went to the prostitutes to mess around, but I don't see that here. I really don't get that impression, but let's leave it at that. Okay, so there's the bread. But then we get the next part, their arrival and their concern, starting in verse 2. The king heard. Again, they just, word got out fast, you know, somehow, some way, but they, king wanted these guys. He knew about them. Let's nip this in the bud right away. Now, again, fascinating here, this Rahab. Why did she do these things? They came and she hid them, and then she lied. You know, I read a whole bunch of an article about some people being concerned that she lied, that God used this sin of lying, and you can wrestle out if you want to. I just take it as part of the story. I'm not too concerned. You know, she did what she had to do. Why? What in the world? Why would this woman risk her life for these guys? She could have easily just said, there, got him. It would have been as far as her culture, her town, that would have been the right thing to do. That would have been the normal thing to do. You know, it would have been the most self-interested thing to do. You know, I don't want to get killed. I don't want, my family to get killed. You know, take them away. But she didn't. This foreigner, this outsider, a woman, a prostitute, for some reason, took these guys in. And you wonder why. Well, then we get to the meat of the sandwich. And here's where our attention needs to go. If we want to know why, we look at this confession of faith. And this is quite amazing when you really get down to what is going on here. Here's the reason that Rahab helped the spies. So out of place, such an odd thing, but we see first there's this, the news of Yahweh, the news of the Lord. You look at verse 2, she said, we heard what you did. Word had gotten out. I mean, stuff like this doesn't usually stay quiet. I mean, a sea parting and people walking through it kind of gets out after a while, right? Kings killed and their entire kingdom slaughtered and gone. Yeah, that gets out after a while. And you wonder what's going on. And plus there's this huge group of people that for the last 40 years have been just wandering around over there across the Jordan. Yeah, you're going to hear about it. And Rahab heard about it. And so we see here the beginnings of faith from this Canaanite prostitute woman who had every reason to not do any of this stuff, and yet she heard and reacted in this way. She saw that the Lord had, again, see where her focus is even here. The Lord has given you the land. We heard how the Lord delivered you. We how the Lord parted the Red Sea. We how the Lord defeated these kings. And so again, our attention goes there. And the people heard this and now they're thinking, hey, they're knocking right on our door and they're afraid. Can you imagine the spies' reaction here? And they're sent out to kind of scope things out, see how it's going. The spy trip from earlier did not go so well, 40 years ago. How encouraging was it to these guys? How excited would they be to want to get back to Joshua and say, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe it. The people are scared to death of us. It's amazing. So the news, just the news itself of what was going on was enough to turn Rahab to help these guys. But I don't think that was all of it. You know, news itself is nice and maybe you'll make you afraid, but Rahab shows a lot more here. If you look at in verse 10, I think we see her acknowledgement of the might of God, the might of Yahweh. And that's important here. I say Yahweh because that was the distinguishing name from all the other gods that are around. Right? God has a name, Yahweh. I am Yahweh. And Rahab uses that name specifically. We know. And she sees the might. Look at verse 10. Oops. Did I say 10? Yes. 8, 9, 10. For we heard how the Lord drive the water in the Red Sea, and you killed the kings. And then in verse 11, and as soon as we heard, our hearts melted because of you. For the Lord your God, listen here, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Amen. Where did that come from? How? How did she understand that? That's Israel's deal. If you look back in Deuteronomy, I wrote it down here, I think it's chapter 4. I mean, that's the very confession that Israel makes. When Moses was laying out the Ten Commandments and all these different things, and they just acknowledge, the conclusion they come to is that the Lord, he is the Lord of heavens and earth. So we see there the majesty, the might of Yahweh, that he killed these kings, and then the majesty of Yahweh. In Deuteronomy 4:39, Israel's, but Rahab made the connection. She went from knowledge of this great God to who he is, who he really is, the God, the only God, the mighty God, the great God. The majesty of God is shown here. And then, out of that then, Rahab understands and got a hold of the mercy of Yahweh. Her reaction is to seek God's mercy. You know, the evidence of faith for anybody isn't just how we dress or going to church. It's running to God. It's seeking his refuge. It's seeking him, knowing he is the one who can give us that. And that's what Rahab seeks here. She is convinced of this reality of God that is different from everything else around her. Completely different from the culture she was raised in from a baby. And against all of that, she is convinced that God is the God who is above all, and so she runs to him. She tells these guys, please, please, I can see what's going on here. Have mercy on me and my family, for it is the God who can do it. I mean, why should she expect any mercy? Why should these spies have any reason to give mercy, even in the light of what she did? We talked about a couple weeks ago of Israel's intention here, that the policy of harem. Right? They were going in and they were taking out everybody. Man, woman, child, animals. That's what they were going to do. Why even imagine that you could spare her? Or why would she even imagine that she could be spared? And yet, because of her knowledge and faith, she appealed to God for his mercy. It's quite amazing. A Canaanite harlot fleeing into the arms of God. That's the meat. That is what we want to come to. Now, the rest of the story, we see how she lets him out. They make the promise conditions. He says, hey, if you break your word, all bets are off. The scarlet cord goes in the window. People make a lot of that. It should echo in your minds, maybe like Passover, right? I mean, you kind of think that mark, that, you know, way back in Egypt when they put that blood on their doorposts, the angel of death was going to pass over. And in a very similar way, we see this scarlet cord and you know, one can make too much of such things, but yet you can't help but hear an echo there of God's mercy and how he works. And he's going to pass over this household because of their faith. And it's interesting here, what you do, it seems like here that as soon as these guys left, she put that cord up. I'm not going to forget. You know, imagine how silly she would have felt if, like, you know, Israel, the walls come down and she went, oh, I forgot to put the cord up. Darn. So she put that thing up right away. Right away. And then the spies get back to Joshua and said, you would not believe what just happened. Now, I don't know what their purpose was. You know, I would imagine, I mean, militarily, they were looking for weaknesses. Maybe they're trying to get somebody on the inside, maybe find some government official that they could convince to let them in, open the gates out at night, whatever it was. I mean, you know, those kind of things. So you may wonder, why did they even do this? I mean, did they not have enough faith? Weren't they convinced that God was going to lead them anyway? You know, and really, what news of strategic importance did the spies bring back? Nothing, really. Not that we can see here, other than they're afraid of us. So it wasn't of strategic importance, it was of faith importance. It was, God is with us. God is faithful to us. He's, these things he said he's going to do, he's doing it. Amen. This is great news, encouragement. And I think that was the point. Is God, in his wisdom, understands us and our need for encouragement. The promise of the land comes through over and over and over again here. Yeah, even in this chapter, in verse 1 and 9, 14, 18, 29, the land, which again represents God's promise, his faithfulness. And God knows that we doubt. I mean, look at the last 40 years. But God, in his mercy and his love, I think just set up this whole thing to encourage them, to let them know, yes, see, I am with you. See, I am faithful. They're going to melt before you. That's what God did for them in this. God is gracious. He knows us. It makes me think, it's kind of like, you know, husbands out there, right? You tell your wife you love her, hopefully, right? Once in a while. Actually say the words. Now, do you need to? I mean, hopefully, you know, they know that you love them and you got married for goodness sakes, right? Or maybe you write them a little note just to say I love you or hear me, right? Again, you don't need to. It's kind of nice though, right? It's kind of nice to be encouraged to just have that confidence there. It helps. And God does that for us all the time. He's telling you, I love you. And he's not just going to, you know, say it once and say, hey, you just need to accept it and not forget. He's graceful and merciless day by day by day by day and shows us. And we see that here. Look, the people are trembling before you. And God has even spoke to a woman, harlot, and revealed himself to her. It's quite amazing. So, how do we bridge this then? What, we mentioned some things here, but I think there's some specific things that we want to make sure we understand going on here. First, I can't help but look at this and I see the beauty of God's grace. Even here, we often, too often, I think, separate Old Testament, New Testament, law, grace. And we spoke about that last week a little bit. That we don't have to go in this division. And because I see grace just pouring out of this story. Amen. And it's beautiful. The God in inspiring these authors to put this story here that maybe you wouldn't need to show us God is graceful. Everything in this narrative works against Rahab coming to faith. I mean, everything. Her background, who she is, the culture around her, and yet, we ask, well, how did that happen? Why her and not everybody else? Everybody else heard the same news, they were terrified, but didn't turn to God, but Rahab did. Grace. God's grace is displayed here. And I think that's what he wants us to hear. This grace glorifies him. This legacy of Rahab is one of grace. Right. And it's an amazing legacy. Yeah. Hebrews 11:31 commends Rahab for her faith. Rahab, in the list of all these great people, Abraham and Moses, and Rahab is there in that list in Hebrews. That is incredible. In James 2:25, he commends her for her works in faith as an example of how faith works out. And that's exactly what we see here. She believed and she acted. But I think the most amazing part of all, we see in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5. And I had forgotten this. I have to admit, for every reason this week, it just really struck me. In the genealogy of Jesus, Jesus' great, 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 whatever grandmother was Rahab. Jesus' relative was Rahab. Just let that sink in. This complete outsider. Someone that, if she walked in here right now and sat down, would frankly make most of us uncomfortable. Was brought in, I mean, not just saved. I mean, again, this whole thing is so weird to me that we can have this hope for those who are outside. Because not only then do they despair her and her family, but they think, okay, then what's she going to do? I mean, Jericho's gone. I literally gone. All the people gone except for them. And they're like, now what do I do? And somehow, some way, she got integrated. She doesn't have a tribe, you know? And you can imagine the murmurings going on. I mean, somebody, you know, the people going, one, hey, guys, what are you doing? First thing you do in get into a city, you go to the prostitute's place? Or maybe they're thinking, clever guys, used her a little bit, you know, kind of manipulated her. You think the religious folks are going, tut, 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 tut. That woman, now we have to have her with us. What are we going to do with her now? And yet, we see that apparently she got integrated. We don't have, you know, obviously she got married to an Israelite. That's incredible. And I hope you can feel just how amazing that is, how God somehow did this. That's the only explanation. And we see that too, how God works. The hope for the outside is that it's God who's working. He doesn't see all that other stuff. He changes hearts. All these other people had the same information, but Rahab, her heart was changed. And we see it all the time. Ruth, the Moabitess, another relative of Jesus. Amazing. We see it in stories like in 2 Kings. Remember the story of Naaman? Naaman was a Syrian general. He got a bad skin disease, and Elisha said, hey, all you got to do is jump in the Jordan here and you'll be fine. And he went, no, that's disgusting. But he had a change of heart. And it's amazing. And Elijah says, hey, you're right with God and you can go back to Syria. And it's quite incredible. God seeks the outsider.
That's right.
And loves them.
Yes.
So what about us? The insiders. That's us. You know, here at Trinity, just by definition, we're the insiders. This is our church, our place, our town. We are the insiders here. Like I mentioned, I mean, there are just problems with Rahab. You know, how she got integrated in the society is quite incredible to me. How does she fit in? She's not like them in any way, and yet somehow. So we have to, I think, understand, one, just acknowledge that outsiders aren't like us. When someone comes to this door and they're not part of us, think how strange this is. I've talked about this before. Where else? Do you walk in somewhere and, hey, how's it going? And here's a bulletin. Check this out. Well, we're going to sing some songs together. Oh, that's weird. Where else do you have words like narthex? Or, you know, you look in the bulletin and you're going, oh, the deaconesses are meeting. The what? What is that? Or, you know, the Berean group is going to meet here. Or, you know, we use all these words. And the outsider comes in and goes, what is going on? And we have to acknowledge and understand that that's how they're going to be. I mean, Rahab comes to Israel and all of a sudden they're talking about sacrifices and all these laws. And she's going, what in the world? She had to learn. And apparently she did because we have Jesus. So understand that outsiders are not like us. And we need to be aware of that. We also have to, I think, confess. If we get right down to it. As people, in our own comfort, we tend to be reluctant to truly welcome and bring an outsider in. we do. And actually, I've seen, I mean, overall, we do pretty good. You know, someone comes in our door, yes, come in, we like you, and all these things. But it's hard sometimes. And we have to acknowledge that, I think, that confront that in our comfort, our desire, familiarity, we may even unintentionally put out a vibe that says, God loves you, and I do too, but, you know, if you wore some different clothes, it'd be better. You know, yeah, you're accepted, absolutely, but, I think you should quit smoking. That'd be better. And it's about our comfort and our desire for familiarity. And we have to confess that, I think. Relationships to the outsider take a lot of energy and time. I mean, you know, I'm, as a general introvert that I am, for me to sit and talk with an insider can be hard sometimes. And then if I gotta talk to and be with an outsider, I just want to run away sometimes. It's hard. It takes energy because they're not the same. And what do you talk about? And how do you do it? And yet, we must. It's not always easy, but we must. I think we also need to understand that from this story, I see clearly God welcomes the outsider. And he uses them to encourage us. I would imagine, I would hope, you know, and as we see this testimony of Rahab through the ages, that even Israel could look at that and go, look how God works. That is amazing. We have to embrace the idea that God is at work in all kinds of people, in all kinds of ways, even ways that I don't like. God works in different kinds of music. God works in different kinds of worship services. God works in so many different ways that may be different. And who am I to judge in these kinds of things? God works in these things. Not to say that we shouldn't be discerning and, you know, and be careful and all those kind of things, but I think God's a lot bigger than we can even imagine.
That's right.
I know it. Okay, I don't think it. I'm pretty sure. And we have to know that God is at work in these things and just to open our minds to it. We have to be careful and make ourselves get past first impressions. And to really listen to people, what they're doing, what's going on. One of the most godly people I ever met in my entire life was this guy, you know, again, first impression, run away. That's what I got from this guy. Big, I mean, taller than me, you know, the biker leather, tattooed, he had scars. And you wonder, how did that happen? And, you know, and yet when you talk to this man, he had the most gentle, and he was godly. And when you spoke to him, he talked about God's word all the time. And he led people to the Lord left and right. This guy was incredible. He had the gift. And he could just walk up to anybody and tell them about Christ. And then he would go, oh, that makes sense. How did you do that? Well, he didn't. But he's and yet my first impression of him when I first met him was, ugh, I don't think so. We have to get past those first impressions. We have to see people as God does, and how God is working, and we need to help these folks then with practical needs. Israel had to help Rahab, okay? I mean, I can't imagine that she went, well, I'm a prostitute, hey, okay. You know, we have to get past those kind of things. There's some practical things that go on when you bring insiders in. And if we want to integrate them, we want them to be part of us, maybe we might have to help them.
That's right.
In real ways to help them get out of things that maybe aren't godly. Not to judge them, but to help them in their walk. Remember that God is at work in the outsider. Always. One last thing. I think it's a real good exercise for us in making a bridge to use Rahab as a mirror. And what I mean by that is we look at Rahab and we see this story and we get to the meat. This confession that Rahab got somehow, some way of who God really is and what he's really about. I think first we can see and confront the ugliness of sin and what it really is. And appreciate then God's grace.
Yeah.
And know that, that's me. I mean, I can look at Rahab and look down my nose and think all kinds of things, but when you get right down to it, my sin is just as ugly. And God's grace saved me. And I can extend that then to her. We can appreciate by looking at Rahab, appreciate God's grace to us. And then we should also use that mirror then to steer us away from our self-righteous inclinations. You know, I confess, it's what we do, right? I mean, I came across in my reading a story. I don't know if it's true. It didn't give me a reference to it, but the story goes like this. So there's an aircraft carrier, and the planes are coming and landing, you know, and if you know anything about aircraft carriers, I can't imagine. I mean, I got to sit in a Navy flight simulator. So the guy thought he'd be fun. Okay, so I'm in this thing. I'm trying to fly this jet, you know. And he says, okay, we're going to land on the carrier over here. So coming in, okay, one, that carrier looks like it's a postage stamp. And you're coming in. And plus, it's moving up and down. And you're going to try to land on it while it's going up and down. And there's just all kinds of things that can go wrong. And the takeoff, same thing. And so the story here was that this pilot, then you get shot off this aircraft carrier, and they kind of disappear for a sec. They drop. Well, then they look up, and this guy's, he's struggling. He's going back and forth, up and down, and it happens. Once in a while, they may lose control and crash. And so everyone's kind of holding their breath, and there's no sound, nothing, anything. And then finally, the plane kind of gets back in control and keeps going. And then they hear on the radio, the pilot says, whew, okay, God, thank you. I'll take over from here. All right? Now, the problem with this story is that, and for us in our self-righteousness tendencies, is that we see God's grace. We may acknowledge that He helps us and brings us and saves us and changes us and says, okay, God, thanks. I got it. I got it now. All right? I know what clothes to wear. I know what songs to sing. I got the lingo down. We're good. I got it. And to look at Rahab in the mirror should turn us, turn away from that inclination and acknowledge day by day by day our deep need for God, our need for His grace every day, that I am no better than an outsider coming in any way except for God's grace.
That's right.
We must make Rahab's choice every day to believe, know what we believe, and act on it when the opportunity comes. Mm-hmm. And then to embrace and understand that I'm an outsider and bring those outsiders in for the glory of God. Amen. Mm-hmm.